And Psi is a four component spinner. Then gamma satisfy anti-commutation relations, which define them more or less completely up to conjugations. So in fact, when dealing with Dirac matrices, one very seldom needs to know their explicit form. It typically suffices to just use their anti-commutation relations to do any computation. So the way we derived this equation seems to be a little ad hoc. So just took the square root of the Klein-Gordon operator, which in particular means that any solution of the Dirac equation will be a solution of the Klein-Gordon equation, but not vice versa. So not any solution of the Klein-Gordon equation with four components will satisfy the Dirac equation. So the Dirac equation in this sense is stronger. And it will have not four independent solutions for, say, any momentum, but less. Now, what about Lorentz invariants of the Dirac equation? Well, it's not at all obvious. So the reason is that these gamma matrices, they're just numerical matrices, which are given from the beginning. And so they should have the same form in all reference frames, which is very hard to imagine how that can happen, because they have a vector index. So Lorentz transformations certainly require them to rotate with the reference frame. What happens is that the spinner also rotates with the reference frame. So when we do a Lorentz transformation, so suppose we change coordinates from x mu to x prime mu, which is equal to, well, some transformation matrix lambda applied to x, then we should accordingly change the spinners. So psi alpha should go to L alpha beta acting on psi beta. And then, of course, so in this equation, L will appear here. So to preserve the equation, we need to multiply it by L to minus 1 from the left. Then it will cancel in this mass term where there is a unit matrix. But here it will not go completely through because gamma is a matrix. So gamma matrices will transform as L minus 1 psi, sorry, gamma L. Okay, so and this transformation should be exactly equivalent to the rotation on applied to the vector index. So if this will be the case, then the equation will be invariant. So then gamma will indeed behave effectively as a four vector. And as a four vector, we can contract it with the derivative and then get the Lorentz invariant expression. OK, so we need to find a set of transformational rules for psi that satisfy this equation. So we will do this in the infinitesimal form. So actually, since Lorentz transformations form a group, that would be, in principle, this is enough. But let's just discuss a simplified problem of infinitesimal transformations. As we know, the infinitesimal transformations of coordinates or of vectors are described by an anti-symmetric matrix omega mu. So we need to find some linear expression in this four-dimensional space of spinors on which the Dirac matrices act, such that, well, it should be linear also in the parameters. So we can write that L is equal to 1 plus omega. So this is, okay, let's say that this is equal up to linear, to the linear order. So it's equal to omega mu. And then some set of 4 by 4 matrices that we'll call sigma. So sigma mu is a set of 4 by 4 matrices. They should be anti-symmetric in their indices, because the symmetric part will cancel anyway in the equation because omega is anti-symmetric. And so they should satisfy this equation. So when we substitute L here and expand to the linear order in omega, and then we read off the coefficient in the linear terms, so this conjugation will become a commutator. In fact, it's convenient to write 1/2 here. So then this equation to linear order becomes the condition that sigmas satisfy particular commutation relations with gammas. So this is the left-hand side. And on the right-hand side, what we will have is G nu lambda gamma mu minus G mu lambda gamma nu. So the problem is to find sigma mu's that satisfy these equations. And the sigma mu's are 4 by 4 matrices. So the natural choice is to, well, somehow express them through the Dirac matrices themselves. And then what can we write? What can we write that will have the same properties? Well, the natural guess is that sigma mu is proportional to the commutator of gamma mu. So this will be anti-symmetric in the indices. It is a 4 by 4 matrix. So we can just try this this expression and see if it works or not. So we want to compute the commutator of gamma mu gamma nu with gamma lambda. So this is a double commutator, and so there will be four terms in the equation. Gamma mu, gamma nu, gamma lambda, minus gamma lambda, gamma mu, gamma nu, minus gamma nu, gamma mu, gamma lambda, and plus gamma lambda, gamma nu, gamma mu. So let's now let's take these two terms and you see that they differ by the position of the gamma lambda matrix. So we can always pull this matrix through the expression by using anti-commutation relations. So let's transform these two terms. So we can write this as gamma mu gamma lambda with the minus gamma nu plus the anti-commutator. So it's gamma mu anti-commutator gamma nu gamma lambda, and then minus gamma lambda gamma mu gamma nu. So you see that I just used here in this term, I replaced gamma nu gamma lambda by gamma lambda gamma nu plus an anti-commutator. And then you can do the same to pull gamma lambda through gamma mu. The sign will change again. So these two terms will cancel. Or I can simply write this as gamma mu gamma lambda minus gamma mu gamma nu gamma mu gamma lambda and then gamma nu, right? So these two terms are combined into an anti-commutator. And then anti-commutator of the Dirac matrices is a number. So this is just 2 times g nu lambda gamma mu minus 2 g mu lambda gamma mu. So then we can take these two terms and do the same trick. So what we will need to do is to, you see that here we have gamma nu gamma mu in the correct order, and then gamma lambda stands on different sides of the expression. So we need to pull, for instance, in this term, we need to pull gamma lambda to the right. So when we anti-commute it twice, the sign will change 2 times. So these two terms will go away. And what we will be left is just anti-commutator terms. So this would be 2 g lambda nu gamma mu minus 2 g lambda mu gamma nu. So finally, we find that this commutator is equal to what? So this is the same term. This is 4 g nu lambda gamma mu. And this is the same term, minus 4 g mu lambda gamma nu. So this is indeed what we want to find. So this is the correct right-hand side of this equation up to a factor of 4. So we conclude that if you take sigma mu nu to be 1/4 of the commutator, then it will generate correct Lorentz transformations on the Dirac matrices. So the way we have dealt with the Dirac matrices here is very, I mean, it's a typical way of doing things when you're dealing with Dirac matrices. So you need only to use the Arendtian commutators usually to simplify the expressions. Okay, so the conclusion is that this is the infinitesimal form of Lorentz transformations when acting on Dirac spinners. So in particular, sigma mu nu will appear E in the transformation of the fields. So when we expand this into the linear order in this Lorentz parameters, then sigma mu nu will act on the spinner index of the psi. So in particular, when we apply the Noether theorem to the Dirac field, the generators of Lorentz transformations will contain the orbital term and this extra sigma mu nu term. So so the generators of Lorentz transformations So there will be a term that comes from the change in the argument of the field. It's the same as for the scalar field, x mu d nu with anti-symmetrized indices, and then minus sigma mu nu. So what does it mean? This means that the Dirac field actually carries spin. So when we have some field configuration of the field psi, then this term will be responsible for its orbital angular momentum, and this is for the well, the rest is just the spin. So for instance, if you take the spatial component Ji, which is I epsilon I J K of L J K. Yes.
Y minus.
Yeah, it seems that I changed sign somewhere, so at some point. Let's see. So this must be the inverse transformation.
Yeah, okay, so this generates the lambda mu dot x transformation of the fields. And we know that in the Noether theorem, the argument of the field should rotate in the opposite direction. So here, I chose to rotate the argument in with the lambda. And then we should take the inverse transformation acting on the field. So that's why there is a minus sign. So so if we define the total angular momentum, spatial angular momentum by this formula, so this will be equal to x dot p cross p, which is the orbital angular momentum. And then if one does a computation, so this one needs to compute the Dirac matrices. Here one has to take their explicit form, so I will not go through this computation, but the result is quite telling. So it's a diagonal matrix in the 2x2 basis, whose diagonal blocks are sigma matrices. So you see that this is basically this is the orbital angular momentum part. And this is the spin operator. And of course, Pauli matrices just describe the spin of a particle that has spin 1 half. So sigma divided by 2 is just the spin operator, the usual non-relativistic quantum mechanics of a particle that carries spin 1 half. So we conclude that the Dirac field describes particles, or we anticipate that it will describe particles of spin 1 half. So this is spin, and that spin is equal to 1. Yes? This is the quantum mechanical interpretation. So the honest way to derive this would be to quantize the Dirac field, find the Noether current for the orbital Noether current associated with these transformations, then express it in terms of oscillators, the associated charge, and then see that each particle indeed raises a spin by 1 half, by minus 1 half, depending on the components. So we will sort of do this calculation, not in much detail, but we will see that indeed this is the right interpretation. Any questions about this part? Oh, that's all clear, then let's continue. And the next problem that we want to understand is to how to contract spinor rings. So when we have vectors, we know that we can contract this. So if you take two vectors, contract their indices, then we get a scalar, so we know that it doesn't transform from one frame to another. It is something that remains invariant and is the same in all reference frames. The question is how we build invariants from spinors. So So the natural guess is that we do the same. So we can take psi and say
take its norm. Well, the question is, it invariant? So to answer this question, we just need to transform this to some other reference frame. So this will transform to Psi dagger L dagger L Psi. So everything boils down to the question, if the Lorentz transformation acting on spinner are generated by unitary matrices. So we can answer this question at the level of infinitesimal transformations. So infinitesimal transformations then have to be anti-Hermitian for the full transformation to be unitary. So to the linear order in omega, L dagger L is equal to 1 plus sigma mu nu dagger plus sigma mu nu contracted with omega mu nu. So omega are real parameters, so just the Hermitian conjugation acts only on the matrix part of this transformation. Now, it turns out that this is actually not zero. So sigma mu nu's are neither Hermitian nor anti-Hermitian. And the reason for that, we already start to see in the last lecture, where we saw that the direct matrices themselves are neither Hermitian nor anti-Hermitian, because the metric is the Minkowski metric is not positive definite. So gamma zero turned out to be Hermitian, and gamma i's are anti-Hermitian. It is convenient to write this condition as a single equation. So we can write that gamma mu Hermitian conjugate is equal to gamma zero, gamma mu, gamma zero. So the way it works is that suppose that mu is zero, then of course we'll have gamma zero to the third power, and then gamma zero squared is equal to 1. So on the right hand side we'll have just gamma zero. So it works. On the other hand, if mu is a special index, then gamma zero will anti-commute with this gamma mu, so we can interchange them. And then again we'll get gamma zero squared on the right hand side. But because when interchanging them, we gain a sign, there will be a minus in the equation. So gammas with the spatial indices are anti-Hermitian. So just a way to write this as a single equation. So we can now compute what is sigma mu nu with the dagger. So this would be gamma mu gamma nu Hermitian conjugate. Now Hermitian conjugation also interchanges the order of matrices in the product. So this is equal to gamma nu, gamma mu conjugate. Then we can write this as gamma zero, gamma mu, gamma nu, gamma zero, gamma mu, gamma zero. And this is basically gamma zero, gamma nu, gamma mu, gamma zero. So finally, we see that sigma mu nu dagger is equal to minus itself, but with the gamma zeros on the sides. Why minus? Because we can write this as minus gamma zero, gamma mu, gamma nu. So we change the order under the commutator sign. We, of course, get the minus. So this doesn't work. Yes. Yes, this is true only for this particular form. And in other forms of gamma matrices, there will always be some special matrix that stands here. That is responsible for Hermitian conjugation. So strictly speaking, we should write some matrix that does this. But okay, then in the basis we are using, this is just gamma zero. Yes?
So I was just wondering that could one make the argument that psi bar, psi dagger psi is not invariant by saying that the Hills are finite dimensional matrices? And since we know that there is no finite dimensional unitary transformation of the Lorentz group, therefore this cannot be unitary.
Yeah, of course, knowing group theory, this argument is immediately obvious, because the Lorentz group shouldn't have finite dimensional unitary transform representations. Indeed, this is a group theory fact. But then it also means that, okay, so we cannot make an invariant of this form, which seems to be a rather bad conclusion. But there is a way to rectify this. So you say that somehow if in this equation gamma zero would appear here, we would be done. Right? So then sigma mu nu is Hermitian in this set, is anti-Hermitian in this sense. So it becomes anti-Hermitian when conjugated with gamma zero. So the idea then is then to introduce a new way of complex conjugation, so which is called Dirac conjugation. So we define the conjugate spinner, and this is usually denoted by psi bar by multiplying psi dagger with the gamma zero on the right. So this is the, just the definition. And now let's see how the psi bar psi transforms. So we can write this as psi dagger gamma zero psi. So this will transform to psi dagger L dagger gamma zero L, and then psi. And then we can argue that that this actually is again gamma zero. So how to see this? Well, what we will do is we will do infinitesimal analysis first, and then so we'll just check this at the infinitesimal level. So what we want to check is the equation that L dagger is equal to gamma 0 L minus 1 gamma 0. So let's prove this for infinitesimal transformation. So then we can expand the left-hand side as 1 plus sigma mu dagger omega mu. And on the right-hand side, we'll have gamma 0, 1 minus sigma mu omega mu gamma 0. So these terms cancel because gamma 0 squares to 1. And what's left is basically this equation. So this works. And then okay, let's believe that it works for finite transformations as well, which actually, I mean, since Lorentz transformations form a group, anything that that is true at the infinitesimal level immediately translates into the full group level just by exponentiation. So then let's continue the equation that we have there. So then we have this expression, and we can use the equation over there, L minus 1 gamma 0, gamma 0 L psi. So this is 1. So we'll have psi dagger gamma 0 L minus 1 L psi. So this is again 1. And this is psi bar. So we see that psi bar psi is indeed Lorentz invariant. So the conclusion is that to contract spin radiuses, we should multiply by the conjugate matrices by gamma 0 from the right. So then we'll get invariants, or more generally, quantities that transform in the correct way under the Lorentz group. So in particular, psi bar psi is a scalar. Then psi bar gamma mu psi is a vector. And for instance, psi bar sigma mu psi will be an antisymmetric tensor. And so on. So any combination of Dirac matrices inserted between psi bar and psi behaves as a vector. So then when we contract the indices, this will be just a tensor of the Lorentz group. And so this is the way to relate to build invariants from tensors. And this is something that we will need, for instance, when we construct the Lagrangian for the Dirac field. The Dirac Lagrangian should be a scalar.
Yes. Psi bar psi, when you transform that in that board, the gamma naught did not transform?
The gamma naught did not transform, yes. So gamma naught here is not really... Yes, so it is related to the previous question. So this gamma naught is it is better. It would have been better to use some other letter for it, because it's really the matrix that conjugates Dirac matrices. So the
it's numerically equal to gamma.
Numerically, it is equal to gamma zero in this particular representation. So this mathematically it would be better to use something else, but just in all the literature it's called gamma zero. People just don't care. Now we are ready to write the Dirac Lagrangian. In the Lagrangian, of course, we need to be able to quantize the system. Okay, so the Lagrangian, one can just take the Dirac equation and multiply it by psi bar from the left. So this is the simplest way to formulate the variational problem for the Dirac equation. So since psi is a complex spinner, and we can say that psi dagger and psi are independent variables. So if we take a variation with respect to, say, psi dagger, then we get the Dirac equation multiplied by gamma zero from the left. Then gamma zero is a non-degenerate matrix, so we can eliminate it by multiplying the equation by gamma zero. So this indeed reproduces the Dirac equation from the variational principle. And we can take this as a starting point for deriving the canonical variables, then finding the Hamiltonian, finding the commutation relations, et cetera, et cetera, which I will not do because first of all, it takes a lot of time, and then the result can be easily reproduced by a simpler recipe that we saw working for the Klein-Gordon field. So we'll just solve the Dirac equation, find the most general solution, and then interpret the Fourier coefficients as creation and annihilation operators, and see what properties, what quantum numbers they have. So this will be the strategy. But still, it is convenient to, at least see what is the Hamiltonian. So one can, of course, write this in separate time and space spatial derivatives. So then one can write this as psi dagger I psi dot. And then plus I psi dagger, let's say psi bar gamma I di,
psi and minus m psi bar psi. Okay, so you see that, first of all, since the Dirac Lagrangian is first order in time derivatives, then the conjugate momentum to the field is the field itself, or better to say the complex Hermitian conjugate to psi. So the momentum, so psi and psi dagger satisfy the canonical commutation relations, just like in the first quantized systems that we studied in the first lecture. So this term is basically P Q, Q dot, right? So it's already in the form of that we usually use in the Lagrangian. And so this means that what stands here is simply minus the density of the Lagrangian. So the Lagrangian, the density of the Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian for the Dirac field is, one should integrate over all space. Or there is another way to derive the same equation. One can apply the Noether theorem to the Dirac field and derive the energy momentum tensor. And then, this would be the integral of T00. So there is certain subtlety in this approach. One has to be very careful with derivatives when applying the Noether theorem. So I will not go through this analysis. Yes. That's right, yes. So one has to integrate by parts. And so a better way is to assume that this derivative acts half time here, half time there. So plus total derivative. So this is the way to resolve all the subtleties. But let me skip this part because if one does everything correctly, then the answer turns out to be consistent. So the space-time symmetries are not the only symmetries of the Dirac Lagrangian. It is obviously Lorentz invariant, because so here what we have is a vector contracted with the with another vector. So because between psi bar and psi, gamma mu behaves as a vector, really. And then the second term is just a scalar. So this the Lagrangian density is a scalar, as it should be. Now, compared to the Klein-Gordon theory, there is an extra symmetry because psi is a complex field. So we can change its phase by an arbitrary number, provided that we also transform the conjugate field. This is the same as transforming psi bar. And then one can derive the Noether current associated with this symmetry, which has compounded gamma psi, gamma mu psi. So this current is conserved. So particles described by the Dirac equation carry charge. They carry a spin which is equal to 1/2, and then they carry charge. We can normalize to be equal to 1. And the simplest example of such particles are electrons.
And so this is how Dirac, this is the reason why Dirac actually started thinking about the Dirac equation, because he wanted to construct a relativistic theory of electrons. And he realized that the Dirac equation indeed describes charged particles with spin 1/2. So we will interpret this current as just an electric current. In particular, its zero component, which is psi bigger psi. Is interpreted as a charge density, electric charge density. And now, interesting thing happens. So you see that here we do obtain psi dagger psi, but it transforms not as a scalar, but rather as a zeros component of a four vector. And this pretty much makes sense because the density of electric charge is not really a scalar. It's a component of a four vector. On the other hand, it is this expression that is explicitly, it's manifestly positive, right? So it's a, it's an absolute value, absolute. In a sense, it's a length squared of the complex vector psi, right? Unlike psi bar psi, which is not really a positive quantity. So the spatial component is just the electric current.
Being positive,
it
seems that would be more appropriate for probability density.
Yeah, it's true. So this is because psi becomes an operator.
Right.
And so thinking of it as a function, it's actually wrong. Yes, indeed. So this can be, in quantum theory, this can be positive or negative. Okay, so let me stop here. And do you have any questions on this part?
Perhaps about the last point which you made, because if you have an operator which can be written as a like J0, so it's written like Hermitian conjugate of something and Hermitian and the original operator, then the eigenvalues of this will always be positive. So even as an operator, it's a completely positive quantity.
Yeah, that's. Let me think over the break, try to answer your question. Okay, so let's make a break for 5 minutes, and then we start at 10 sharp.